Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Music at Midday musical concert series gets underway tomorrow at St. John's Episcopal Church at 41st in Atlanta with a noontime performance by popular Tulsa pianist Baron Ryan. Subsequent concerts will feature solo pianists, organists, and small chamber groups Wednesdays through October 27th. The church has emerged as an increasingly popular venue for classical performances from the Baroque and Renaissance era under the leadership of St. John's music director Joseph Arndt, who joins me today. In addition to their regular schedule of sacred music, the church will also host a Chamber Music Tulsa concert by Sonari Chamber Ensemble, performing music from the German Baroque on Friday, October 8th. The Oklahoma Bach Choir, an ensemble in residence at the church, will sing several Bach cantatas with authentic instruments in early December. And there will also be a program of Loss in Memory on October 22nd, Heinrich Schütz Musikalisch Exegien, considered one of the first requiems in the German language. Here's an excerpt. That's music from Heinrich Schütz's Musikalisch Exegien, which will be performed by members of the St. John's music program on October 22nd. My guest today is the music director for St. John's, Joseph Arndt. Joseph Arndt, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You're music director at St. John's Episcopal Church, and your Music at Midday series will begin tomorrow. This is, about the seventh year for this? How did this series get started, and what do you try to do with the series?
This is the seventh season, so it's the beginning of my seventh program year at St. John's. And when I visited the church back in early 2015, I just had a hunch that a series like that could really work well, in part because of the part of town it's in. And I just have seen series like that work other places, but I thought it could kind of be in its best manifestation at a parish like St. John's. So it started, as it still is, with recitals at 12 noon on Wednesdays, and then there's a lunch at 12:30. Now, that'll look a little different during the pandemic, but when times were sort of at their highest, we'd get anywhere between, on the best days, 80 to 120 people come, and we used to have a group of parishioners who would make lunch. And it was sort of an activity for them, but it also really added to the whole experience. This fall, we're doing boxed lunches from Queenie's. And people need to RSVP for those by Monday midday. But we're still carrying on with lunch, just not making it at the church. But.
And could it be a brown bag experience for people on their lunch hour as well?
I suppose it could be. I mean, right now, I think people could certainly bring it and eat it in the parish hall. I mean, maybe not during the concert, but we have a separate space. And during this fall especially, we're going to offer some outdoor seating as long as the weather is good to try to make people feel more comfortable.
Yeah, that was my next question, is how has this series evolved due to the pandemic?
Well, for about a year, we did the recitals online only, but we added the in-person component again back this spring of 2021. And so this fall, we're taking a step a little farther, doing online and in-person and bringing back the lunch. So, but we have performers from Tulsa and then performers from all over, really. I mean, we've had a harpsichordist in from New York. We've had Baroque players from Texas. We've had a Brazilian lutenist play several years ago. So I try to keep it a mix, a healthy mix of instruments, of styles, and people you can hear locally, but also that you won't hear locally unless they're with us or somebody else has them.
And the series kicks off with Baron Ryan, so it perhaps will be some of his own compositions, as well as perhaps a little jazz as well, a little mix of musics.
Yes, he's definitely featuring his sonata that he wrote. And he played at St. John's earlier this year because Chamber Music Tulsa, which I'm a board member of theirs, commissioned a piano trio from him to help us remember the Tulsa Race Massacre. And that was well received. And so I look forward to him doing a solo recital on our own series.
Now, he'll kick off the series. That begins tomorrow, as a matter of fact, at 12 noon. You have a sort of a mix of people that'll appear in these the fall series, including a trio, a duo Avanzando, which features David Carter from the Tulsa Symphony, but also a percussionist, which is sort of an interesting duo experience.
Yes, I'm definitely a big fan of David's. You know, he's been on the series a few times, and he and Paul Sweet have played together the other times, but he, you know, sent me a message earlier this summer and said, hey, I'm putting together a new clarinet and percussion duo. And I thought, well, I know David, so I know it'll be great. So I've no doubt it'll be really great. So I'm really looking forward to that. There's some unusual repertoire on there, and I'm really looking forward to that.
You'll be doing an organ recital as a part of the series. What are you going to be playing?
Yes, I am. One of the things I'm going to play is a prelude and fugue by Marcel Dupré. Dupré was probably, I think you could easily say, the most influential organist composer of the 20th century. This fall, we are commemorating the 50th anniversary of his death. Dupré was sort of a legendary organ teacher, and he was very well traveled in the United States. We have, you know, there are recordings he made on important instruments in New York City and some other places, and some of his compositions are tough. And when he was writing in the very beginning of the early 20th century, nobody was writing organ music as he was. You know, a lot of the music was, I would say, perhaps easier listening, easier on the hands, easier on the feet, but with Dupré, all your muscles and ligaments are going. So I think it was really a game changer as far as organ technique. So I'm playing one of his three preludes and fugues from 1912, and then I will offer other pieces by Dupré later this fall as well.
Yeah, so. I know the church is actually hosting a concert to commemorate Dupré. What was different about the way he composed for organ?
Well, I would say he was really, he had a technique for some reason that really exceeded most other organists of the time, but he had a scrupulous dedication to counterpoint. You know, he was writing fugues that were very sophisticated, and he would come up with a theme that was sort of hard enough to play with your hands, but then when you have a four voice theme, eventually it makes its way into the feet, so you know, so it comes in a couple times in your hands, comes in the feet. So I think just the dexterity and the ability to navigate all that busy writing. Now, it actually, for the most part, it's pretty accessible, at least his early music for your sort of general audience. I mean, it has a peppiness to it, and it's even has some sort of jazzy bits. But I think, you know, in late 19th century French Romanticism, when you think of composers like Franck, for example, especially in the organ music, there's much more an emphasis on melody and sort of one dominant voice, you know, with some chromatic bits where you've got modulation. But with Dupré, there's sort of a different focus on counterpoint and on all these different musical lines happening.
And counterpoint means you have a melody, but you also have counter melodies that fit in with the melody, and sort of you have these multiple voices.
Right.
And was he sort of a pianistic sort of organ composer, or was it a very different than a pianistic style?
I think you could say it's pianistic as well as organistic. I mean, you've got to have hopefully good piano technique. Like, I actually practice Dupré on the piano, whereas I don't really Bach, you know. But because if you can play Dupré on the piano, you can play it on the organ. Because the touch on the piano is, of course, more resistant. And, I mean, you have to have, it's more of a percussion instrument with mm-hmm. the hammers and all that. So if you can play it accurately on the piano, taking it to the organ, at least as far as the keyboards, the manuals go, is sort of an easier step.
Now, it's interesting, we're talking a little about organ technique. One of the things that your church does is that you have an artist in residence. as a part of your music program. How did that get started?
Well, Adam Pagin, who teaches organ at OU, he originally became artist in residence to play for Choral Evensong. And at that point, we were doing it once a month. Now we do it every Sundays. It's grown. But so originally, I think we might have thought of it as sort of a temporary thing, but it went so well that he is there all the time. But it's sort of, I think it's a distinctive title for him because he brings a certain skill set that the church wouldn't have otherwise. I mean, he helped us with designing the new organ we got in 2018. He teaches, of course, organ playing at OU, but he teaches organ design and building, and he also works on instruments. So, and not many organists can actually go inside a pipe organ and tinker with it and make it better. I've learned a lot just by working with him, but, you know, like if you're a string player or a brass player, you tend to know a lot more about your instrument, right? I mean, it's portable, you take it with you.
We don't work on it, though.
Right. But chances are you may have commissioned it and you learned about how it was made.
Right.
You know, but like a pipe organ is hundreds and thousands of pieces of...
Yeah, it's a mechanical... Yes. It's a factory machine almost.
Right. So there's a lot of sort of mystery behind how it works for me anyway. I think I know more than a lot of organists, but still my knowledge is not close to what his would be, I don't think. But he just brings a skill set that's really beneficial.
So how has he tinkered with the organ to make it work better in a given situation?
Well, so, I mean, when we built the Schoenstein organ, it was great to begin with. But I just mean, like, over time, you know, a couple pipes might be a little loud, and he can go in the chamber and soften them, you know, because all these different things you can do with organ pipes to adjust their sound. If you pick a certain stop on the organ and you're going up the keyboard, if one note sticks out, chances are it's a regulation issue. So he can go in there and fix it, where I would just pray the next time our curator comes that I remember to mention it.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting because, you know, we think of an organ as being an electronic instrument, but it is a combination of electronic instrument and wind instrument.
Yes, it is a wind instrument.
It really is a wind instrument, but it uses electronics.
Yes, it does. So it's both.
You know, that's the difference between Bach's era and, you know, the modern era, is that somebody was having to provide the wind for Bach when he was playing the organ.
Right.
And sometimes
yes.
It was him himself,
pumping
it out. Yeah.
Well, I think that the main point I'd say about Adam being the artist in residence is that together we're able to do programs and music for services that we couldn't do otherwise. You know, it really takes two hopefully highly skilled organists to pull off some of the repertoire we do, especially at Choral Evensong and some of the concerts we do, and, you know, it's together that we're able to do really what we are doing.
And what's interesting about your music program is there is this combination of, it's really music for service, but there's also music for the community as well.
Yes. Thank you. I appreciate you saying that, because I think that, at least the way I view church music, of course, is that it's for the worship of God and it's for the edification and spiritual formation of the members and the people who attend the services. But I think that it's a gift to share with the community. And I view it as outreach. People need art and music. And I think that it's been a priority that a lot of our things are free. And this fall, except for one event we're doing with Chamber Music Tulsa, everything is free. And I think it's a gift that we give. And I think that music, when it's at its best, it helps you express things that you can only do that way. You know, like when you think about the words to something, and if you remember it from music, like I remember French conjugations better because when I was in school, I learned songs to go with the conjugations. And there's some of them are really silly, but it's a good teaching device. I think people learn theology, they learn history, they learn deep material through music best.
My guest today is Joseph Arntes, the music director at St. John's Episcopal Church. Their series for the community, Music at Midday, starts tomorrow at 12 noon. First of several programs this fall will begin with Baron Ryan at the piano. Next week, Joseph Arndt will play the organ. Paul Sweet plays the piano on October 6th. Another organist on October 13th. And then two chamber music programs close that out, including the Otis Trio, which features a clarinet, cello, and piano at the end of October. And about that same time, you'll be doing an evening program featuring the music of Heinrich Schütz.
Yes. Well, Schütz was a profound composer, and we're going to be offering on Friday, October 22nd in the evening, his Musikalische Exequien. And I think that there are certain reasons why this music is going to be especially meaningful in the year 2021. Well, Schütz is an interesting figure in musical history, and I think that really before Johann Sebastian Bach, he was the most important composer in Germany before Bach. You know, Schütz studied in Italy, and when you listen to his music, you can definitely hear influences of Gabrielli. With Gabrielli, you think of those multiple choirs singing and sometimes echoing each other, and that definitely shows forth in Schütz's music. But, you know, Schütz lived, I think it was 1585 to 1670 something, and so he experienced the entirety of the 30 Years' War. And of course, that was a period of conflict, but also of disease, you know, and the war was made doubly worse by illness. And, you know, you had the flu and then the plague. You know, I think that one thing the coronavirus pandemic has done is reminded us of our limits. You know, it's reminded us we don't live forever. You know, I feel like a lot of people with our advances in medicine and our emphasis on, you know, putting calories on food labels, we put a lot of emphasis on prolonging life, and that's good. But one of the things it does is it allows us to forget
how fragile life is.
Yeah. And, you know, Schütz is writing this music at a time where death was familiar, you know, and being a Lutheran in those days, there was idea that death is a release, you know, and so he wrote this music for a funeral of a prince, Prince Heinrich Posthumus. And so this prince had, you know, sort of done a lot of planning for his funeral. And Schütz set all these texts to music. A lot of them are from the scripture. But the first thing you hear in this piece is a solo tenor saying, well, I'm going to say it in English, but in German you'll hear, "Naked, I came out of my mother's womb." And what a, and then it, the next voice's answer, "And naked I will return." And so you get all of these meditations on the meaning of life and how fragile it is. So I feel like I'm kind of glad we are doing it this year, because I think it's going to be more meaningful than ever. So we're going to do it with 8 singers. I'll play the organ. Adam, our artist in residence, will conduct, and we'll have a cellist and a theorbo player. And I bet a lot of people in Tulsa haven't heard of theorbo. It's an arch lute, and it plays harmonics that go with the organ. And usually when this music is offered, which isn't too often, you do it with small forces. But we're really doing it one on a part. So all the singers will be on their own part. And I think it kind of evokes, in a way, the forces Schütz had access to. You know, so many people died in the 30 Years' War, and he would often perform music with bare bones forces, you know, and when he was working in Dresden for most of his life, he just almost just assembled music for the musicians he had.
Yeah.
And so we're kind of nailing it down to the bare bones. And so all of us, our preparation matters even more, you know, all of our contributions matter more. So I think it's going to be an intimate performance.
This piece it's almost, in a way, it sort of predates by a couple hundred years what Brahms would do with the Requiem form, with his German Requiem, which is not set on the Requiem Mass, but he sets it to verses and poetry that sort of reflect on the nature of life and death. And it sounds like this Schütz piece is, while it's using biblical verses, is sort of the same sort of thing done again in the German language rather than Latin, you know, the typical language of the church, although this is by this time the Lutheran church.
Yes, I mean, when you think of the Requiem Mass, like in the Roman liturgy, there's a very set structure. There's a certain text structure, a certain order of the text, but the German Requiem has, I think it's more a little more open-ended and, you know, has not such a set structure. And I think it allows for a beauty of variety in the text. And I think it's fair to say that this Requiem, or if you want to call it that, by Schütz, is kind of the first we know of in the German language. And that, you know, Brahms's Requiem is sort of a descendant of it in a way, you know, just a couple hundred years later.
Yeah. And that event takes place Friday, October 22nd at 7 o'clock, again featuring musicians from the community of St. John's and other invited guests.
Yes.
And that will also be the case somewhat for your Bach choir. You started this a couple years ago, and you've done a couple of Handel Messiahs. And in December, you're going to do a different Bach program, and it'll be devoted to some of the early cantatas of Johann Sebastian Bach.
Yes.
And it's rather than Handel's Messiah this year.
Right. Well, I started the Bach choir because I really feel like, although any moderately serious classical music aficionado knows of Bach, but I think that his cantatas are largely unfamiliar to most people.
Really, when you think of Bach's output, we know just a small fraction of it. We know maybe the orchestral suites. Mm-hmm. We know a handful of the organ works.
Right.
Some of the violin concertos and maybe some of the partitas and things like that.
Brandenburg concertos.
And the cello suites. But beyond that, we don't really listen to much Bach. And of course, a bulk of it is, 140-something cantatas that he wrote?
Yes. So in his catalog, which is called BWV or whatever, BWV1 to in the mid-200s is largely vocal music. And so a lot of the cantatas are lost. But when in the 1720s, Bach started a new position in Leipzig, and he wanted to realize this dream of what I think in English we would roughly paraphrase as a well-regulated church music. You know, up until about 1723, he had largely been writing music for the court, instrumental music. And so when he started in Leipzig, he had to do lots of things. He had to teach the boys Latin in the school, and he had to provide oversee music for multiple Leipzig churches, but at the couple main churches, he set on presenting a different cantata or two every week, and that was in a cycle that went along with the church calendar. And a lot of them are based on chorales or German hymns. And I think that although to a lot of listening audiences, these are unfamiliar, I think that it's very clear when you start to listen that this is Bach at his most profound. It really is. I think Bach, the philosopher, and you know everything, just the way he interprets these texts, it's incredible. And so before I moved to Tulsa, I played a lot of Bach cantatas in New York at a series called Bach Vespers at Holy Trinity, and that's really where I kind of fell into doing that when I was a Juilliard student. And I'm so glad I fell into it, because it's one of the favorite things of all the things I do. So we're going to offer two Advent cantatas. Cantata number 62, Nun komm, dir Heiden Heiland. So come now, Savior of the heathens. And Wachet auf, Sleepers Wake.
Which was one of the few pieces of the cantatas we actually know.
Yeah, so I think a lot of listeners would recognize one of the movements of that. And then we're also going to include cantata 35, which is quite unusual. It's not an Advent cantata, but we're just adding it in because we can. It's for solo alto, and it has an organ solo part. So this is kind of an early version of a concerto movement. That cantata is in two parts, and the first movement in each part has an organ solo part that's very elaborate and fun to hear, and not so fun to play, because it's certainly a lot of notes. But it's really fun to hear, and you know, an organ concerto or a keyboard concerto was a new concept in Bach's day. And I think that, you know, like one of the Brandenburg concertos has a big harpsichord solo. I mean, that was quite unusual. You know, by the time Haydn and Mozart were around, having a concerto with an instrumental soloist was no big deal. I mean, I think audiences became very accustomed to that. But having a soloist especially a keyboard soloist within an ensemble, was kind of unusual. So, and we're doing that one because we have all the forces there to do it. So, but the main cantatas are two Advent cantatas. So I hope people will come and join us.
And when you do these Bach choir things, you're doing them with period instruments as well, which doesn't have a real strong history in this part of the country. A lot of times that's an East Coast and really European thing for the most part.
Yeah, there is a really strong contingent of early music people in Texas. Mm. And that's a lot of what we draw from. I mean, they're right in your back door, but I love hearing music in Tulsa, of course, but I love being able to go to Dallas and Denton. And so a lot of the people who play drive up, they're kind of associated with University of North Texas. And then a couple more of the specialist wind instruments will fly from New York, or we have someone coming from Charlotte this December, I think. But those are usually people who play an instrument that's specialized. And usually that person has an academic appointment and then plays a lot of freelance gigs. But I think that hearing Bach with period instruments at the historical pitch with, a more reduced number of forces kind of does something to give you the spirit of the music. And I think you gain something when you can hear it with the period instruments, because the period instruments do something that modern instruments don't do so easily. Modern string instruments, modern brass instruments, they're meant to carry in a symphony hall.
Yes.
They're
not really designed for a church, really.
Right. And they're not. So they have a different purpose in a way. You think of a modern string instrument as steel strings. The sound of a modern trumpet is meant to, play.
Carry to the back, to the highest balcony. Right.
Exactly. So, at St. John's, when modern players do come, we always navigate how do we make the sounds that are right for that space.
Right. And basically that means play softer.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot softer.
Exactly. So, but anyway, I love Bach on any instrument, but it's just a particular privilege to have those historical instruments.
If people want to learn more about the Music at Midday series or some of the special events you have coming up, what's the best way to do that?
Well, you can go on the church website, sjtulsa.org, or you can go on Facebook. You can certainly call the church, email me. We can get you a brochure, and you can be on our email list. You can certainly contact me or call the church to do that. And we have a pretty active Facebook group, which gives updates. And our communications director has helped me start a vlog that I do that airs every Monday, late morning, where I share things too. That vlog is on Facebook and Instagram.
Well, Joseph, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
The music director at St. John's Episcopal Church, Joseph Arndt, who has a busy schedule of classical music events coming up, including the start of Music at Midday. Their musical concert season gets underway tomorrow at noon with Tulsa pianist Baron Ryan. We're going to leave you with music from one of those Bach cantatas that the Oklahoma Bach Choir will be performing in early December. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.